1-4, here's a good game. Arena Ball.
To AFL Tonight. I am your host, Tim Capper. It's going to be going solo this week. What the heck's going on? A couple of weeks without JP. It's like old times again, I tell you. excuse me. I'm sure if you've been watching our Twitter feed or our Facebook feed, you can. I am fighting a cold. I'm not the one to get sick all that often, but I just cannot believe I have this cold like the way I do right now, and I apologize for sounding, if I sound a little hoarse or whatever, I apologize for how I sound, but we do have some stuff on tap this week. It may not be the normal length of podcast that we normally have, but I still wanted to at least bring you something this week, considering... Interesting, you know, interesting stuff that did occur, you know. Besides, we're now into week 10, and we also have our second head coaching firing in the AFL. And remember, last week we were talking about, you know, head coaches being fired within a year, how they did well, you know, how their replacement did well afterwards. Excuse me. And so far, you know, James Fuller is over. But them picking up, they picked up a very well known wide receiver this past week. Can anybody think of who he is? Anybody? Bueller? Will Pettis is making his return to the Vigilantes. Now, will that make any real big difference? We'll have to see. Looking at their wide receiving core right now, you know, Derek Lee, Kenny Henderson, Larry Brackens, you know, combined, they have 34 of the 35 receiving touchdowns. So, where is he going to fit in? We'll find out. But we're talking about head coaches. Utah, basically, how's the best way to describe this? It's like they went back in time. Obviously the current head coach, or the previous head coach for the Blaze was not doing so well. And that's to say things mildly. I think they had something to the effect of it was 6 fumbles, 3 lost. Quarterback situations, a totally botched play a couple weeks ago where they could have easily knocked off the Milwaukee Iron, but not knowing the rules when it comes to after a penalty and when the clock starts, totally dropped the ball. So it looks like that there needed to be a change up in Utah. Let's see here. Yeah, Ernesto Pernsley. You start off at 1-6, you're probably going to go the way of Rich Ingold, which he happened to, which is bye-bye unemployment line. Or as the AFL likes to call it, to be placed on the reassignment list. It's like going to the Twilight Zone. But in his case, it just righted a wrong in Utah. As you know, before the previous AFL folded, whatever, folded, stop, whatever you want to call it, folded, suspended operations, blah, blah, blah. Ron James had been named their head coach. You know, this is when Denny White was still there, etc. And then the league did what it did, teams did what it did. You know, Utah Blaze became the Utah Valley Thunder, and then became the Utah Blaze again. And then they hired Ernesto Pearnsley, which, as we saw, was not the right thing from the get-go. But getting Ron James into this position, I think, will help the Blaze. I don't know if he's just going to have too much on his plate. He has a, you know, so-so record, you know, 13-18 overall lifetime record in the AFL. And those 2 years were with the Cleveland Gladiators. So, that's only 15 games there, I just noticed. Was he dropped? Was Ron James dropped? excuse me. But this is the first time since 2004 that we have had multiple firings during the season. Georgia Forest did it back in 04, and then the Indiana Firebirds did it. I think that was it. Actually, there was three teams. Carolina Cobras did the exact same thing. Now, here's a funny note, and to see if you can could come up with the answer to this, because we were going to mention it last week, but we'll leave it for time when it's necessary. No, I don't have any prizes. Maybe I can think of something. Excuse me, if you can come up with the answer. In 2004, the Carolina Cobras were one of three teams to change their head coaches. The unique thing about the Carolina Cobras is that they had three head coaches that year. Three. If you can name them, email me specifically. Do not post it. You can send me a direct message via Twitter at arenafan.com/Twitter. Hey, it's the other way around, Capper. Twitter.com/arenafan. I'm on cold medication, people. Or send it to me directly at tim.capper@arenafan.com. If you can answer to me the three head coaches that Carolina had back in 2004, I'll see if I can get you guys a prize, whether it be some AF points or something to that effect. But I don't know if Ron James being hired now is going to make much of a difference. I see that they have hired some, they have gotten some other quarterbacks under the belt. Do not know what is going to happen with the Blaze. We will have to see. Can't get any worse than what the current, well, I can. But with getting blown out as bad as they have over the past 2 weeks, for a team that has a grand total of 334 points. I mean, that's 334. When you're scoring 47 points a game, that's usually what you want your defense to give up. But that is, if I'm not mistaken, that is the worst in the league. It is. So 334, 1-3 at home, and they drew, you know what? And they drew their best crowd of the year last week, just over 8,000 people over at the East Center. I know it was appreciation night, military appreciation night in Salt Lake. So whether they were, you know, comps or whatnot, still, they made a, it was nice to see that many people show up, but they need to start winning some more. They're in a tough division. Spokane's hot. They won four in a row. They are the hottest team in the league so far, but we'll have to revisit it. As we've seen, when it comes to head coaches and them finishing the end of the year, when you get replaced, not very many of them have done that well. Best ones probably would be Mike Wilpo back in 04 with Indiana, and Todd Shell with the New York Dragons back in 03. So we will have to see how it goes and see you know, put him and James Fuller going head to head. See who gets the cup for the year. Anybody watch the? You know, yeah, you had the War in I-4 back on television for the first time in a long while. But did anybody happen to catch the Spokane-Jacksonville game on Saturday night? I have always said, besides the NFL Network, SWX out of Spokane is probably the best produced local arena football broadcast. Everything from guys who know the game, who are not afraid to say when they may have gotten a gift horse in the mouth, and I'll get to that in a moment because they actually did mention it. Scoreboard and everything. If you haven't had a chance, go back and watch. Go back and watch last week's Spokane Jacksonville game. Basically, the best two teams in the league. You know, not putting anything in, you know, towards Milwaukee. They are a fine team, but at the time. Jacksonville did lose. I mean, they went across the country. The most yardage flown by one particular team this year so far. And I really, you know, you think that with the flight over, there'd be some lag in, you know, they would be very lethargic. No, not in this case. They actually did quite well. But as you see, Jacksonville did lose. Spokane did knock them off. And it could easily be a preview of Arena Bowl 23. Two different divisions. You never know. Anything could occur. But more than just the game itself, two things occurred. First, in being week 10, Aaron Garcia is now two touchdowns away from tying Clint Dozell for the all-time arena football, and I guess we could say pro football record of passing touchdowns. He just needs three versus Chicago, which happens to be on NFL Network this week. To break the, too bad he couldn't do it at home though. The crowds and the fans in Jacksonville are just absolutely spectacular. But he has a chance to break it this week, and you know it seems funny. Damien Harrell has been able to break the record on television. So is possibly going to be Aaron Garcia. He threw six sacks last week, so unless he gets hurt, I would not be surprised to see him. See him win, and get the record. But if you can't watch the game, stay tuned to our Twitter feed and to the Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/arenafan, and we'll make sure you do not miss that milestone moment of him breaking the league record for most passing touchdowns in a career. But the only thing that really took away from the game this week was, and it happened, it's funny, it happened in the Orlando Tampa Bay game too. The refs, they were actually, and it makes you wonder, you know, Jacksonville only lost by a small margin. You know, traveled all that way, and then they get beat by 10, if I remember correctly. Yeah, they could beat by 10. There are two instances in this game, and this is what I mentioned before about these the play-by-play and color guys for the SWX broadcast, not afraid to point out that they got a gift horse. But there were two instances, one in the third, one in the fourth. You know, the game was quite close at that time. But two instances in the second half, which easily could have... And I don't think it really goes with the rules, it's just not seeing... It's either, you know, the league has made it quite clear that they are not going to... Basically, they're not going to talk referees openly to the public and to the media. They want to keep it in-house. Just like as they're doing with salaries and whatnot. So be it. So be it. But you got to get referees who know exactly what they're doing. Okay? This one, they could easily... First, oh, here, I'll give you an example. Now, maybe it's because he was out of place or whatnot, but the ref for the first Jacksonville for the first Spokane touchdown in the third quarter by Vigil, it was, even when I saw it the first time, at full speed, you could easily tell it was trapped. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I said, you can go to the Nifty broadcast, it is archived, and it's right, literally, first drive of the second half for the Spokane Shock. Clearly, it was trapped. But I guess, you know, Vigil was able to cradle it in such a way where it didn't seem, you know, it made it convincing enough that that he scored the touchdown. But I think probably the other one that really turned the table, Jacksonville was driving in the fourth quarter. And then Kirby Griffin, who has been a very productive fullback for the Jacksonville Sharks, fumbles the ball and Spokane comes up with it. Thing is, though, and everybody, and this is just all football, everybody knows this, whether it be AFL, NFL, CFL, possibly the other alphabet leagues, a fumble cannot be caused by hitting the turf or ground or grass or whatever you want to call it. Guess what? Fumble caused by the ground for Griffin. Thus it goes over to Spokane, and it goes from there. So stops the drive. If I'm not mistaken, Spokane did score after that drive, that fumble recovery, and was able to extend the lead. Refs have got it. Do we need replay again? We know why replay was brought in. It was ESPN. The league wanted it. Only brought it in for the playoffs. It was an epic fail. And they just, you know, tried to improve it with putting in a goal line cam. Here's another example. Refs again. And I don't mean to harp on the refs, but former AF2 fans have known this for how bad these refs can be. Onside kick, Orlando, Tampa Bay. You know, Orlando is trying to make a furious comeback. Storm defensive back Michael Hawthorne. He leapt for the ball at the 10-yard line. So he was right at the 10 where it would have been a legal kick. But then he was actually basically jacked up by an Orlando player, and the ball came loose, and which was recovered by Orlando. Now, at first, the refs ruled it was Orlando's ball, but you know we've seen you. Usually they huddle. Usually 9 out of 10 times they'll get it right, maybe 8 out of 10. They huddled up and then called a kick catch interference penalty. What? And it gave the Storm the ball. But wait a minute. After another huddle, they decided it was indeed Orlando's ball again. Comes down to the rule book now. Refs not knowing the rules... Okay, inept refs... Refs not knowing the rules seems like a constant subject that we've been talking about all year long. Now, the rule book, which the league has decided not to release to the public, they had made a rule change for 2010. And like they have done in years past, and as I've seen in years past for the rule book, they have put it at the very front of the rule book for the current year's changes. Okay? Now this is the new rule. This is the exact wording on this new rule. Protection for receiver on onside kicks. On a grounded kick, contact with a receiving team member who is attempting to field the kick may only be made by a kicking team member who is also attempting to recover the kick. Otherwise, the contact... So basically, you can't just up and drill somebody. Otherwise, the contact, other than going for the ball, will be kick-catch interference. This would not allow the kicking team to contact, other than going for the ball, a player attempting to catch the onside kick until both of his feet are on the ground. So it looks like the refs had it right, but they decided, no, it's not right, and blah, 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 blah. So the original kick-catch interference rule seemed to be right, but yet they decided to... They second-guessed themselves and overruled themselves and said, no, let's go ahead and... they finally... They did get it right. They actually didn't get it right. I'm sorry. I'm looking at this here, and... Yeah, he didn't get it right, because basically he drilled him. Poor Michael Hoffman was basically drilled. Ball came loose. Two players were not going for the ball at the same time. One basically tried to kill him. But as we've seen, it's occurring all, it's occurring all the time. I wish we were able to... Commissioner Kurz, I implore you, at least with media, I mean, we do know there are rule books out there. We do know the one that is sitting on the... Yes, there are a team. It's printed out, it's in a binder, Tampa Bay Storm office. Allow it to be released to the media. Isn't that going to curtail your idea or your concern of it being released publicly to Joe Fan? I would think that would stop, allow us to take a peek at it. We want to be able to explain these rules a little bit more, especially when there are questions. When we see stuff on TV like this or on Nifty, we want to be able to answer it. I bet you NFL Network has a copy. Media. Public broadcasting of the league. Public broadcaster of the league. Yeah, they'll have it. But I just need to get the stats right now. But that's... We've gone over that multiple times already. Multiple people, multiple times. And we won't need to talk about that one. finally. Okay. After weeks upon weeks, it was finally answered. Are finally opened. The AFL team fan shop, or fan team shop, or team fan, whatever. The AFL merchandising shop is finally open and available over at the league site. I checked it out today. It is a little underwhelming. Now, I understand that we're in... Week 10! And the league is just getting it done now. I can understand with the short period of time that it took, that the league's, when the league started up, that this was not one of their priorities. A lot of the hats that seem to be there for former AFL teams are the ones that were used previous in previous years. They were used for the 2008 season. No jerseys, no publications, no stuff, you know. There is some stuff. You might be able to get some better stuff over at the team websites. I have not checked to see what it is like for fans who are outside of the continental U.S. when it comes to shipping and whatnot. I can only imagine if it is like the NFL shop, that the shipping is going to be absolutely horrendous. It is a good start, but it needs to get better. Mini helmets! There are no mini helmets! You do have a major provider, a helmet provider, as one of your league sponsors. What about getting us mini helmets? I'd love to have an Iowa Barnstormers helmet again. I'd love to have one, actually, to have one, period. I don't have one. One of the most iconic helmets in football history. In football history. I'd love to have one. Go along with anybody else's collection, you know. But it's not, you know, not there. So, what do you guys think? Let us know. You know there are multiple ways, especially over on the message boards, too. We finally, remember we were talking about last week, we were talking specifically about, it was JP and myself, we were talking about fan interference, and specifically those two instances in Jacksonville. So I was able to pose the question, in particular, on the weekly Ask Jerry segment over at one of the other fan sites. And we were able to get our answer, but, excuse me, like it has been with a lot of the other questions, it is either illegal to say so, or they're keeping stuff internal, or gobbledygook like that. And just to let you guys know, if you hadn't seen it, this is actually what my question actually was. I said, Commissioner Kurz, with Jacksonville having two highly publicized instances of blatant fan interference with no flags or ejections by the refs, I am curious to know, what is the league's stance? Do we need to have a fan hurt or a missed call causing a team to lose a game or a game before something is done? And Commissioner Kurz, as he always has been very nice to answer these questions. And this, I swear I've seen this answer before, but his answer was, each game is reviewed by the league office and discipline is imposed whether a flag has been thrown or not, if the action warrants such discipline. We do not publicize our internal discipline or compliance matters. Which, as I mentioned at the beginning, yes, I can understand. I really wish I were to be able to get a better answer than just that. Because it also pertains to the refs totally blowing calls. Fan interference is obvious, you know, especially in the two instances in Jacksonville where it's occurred. And then I just want to, you know, he gives great answers. I just want to be able to get a correct answer. I also, as I mentioned before, I emailed the Jacksonville PR director and have yet to get a reply. So I guess we'll have to leave it at that, won't we? Fan Bill of Rights? No. Questions? Yes, but as cryptic as the Da Vinci Code. So, whatever. Maybe we'll all have a flash forward or something like that, and we'll be able to... hopes spring eternal. Not in this case. Interesting thing that happened, and I have only heard bits and pieces of this. Game between Tulsa and Bossier. You know, there have been some places where noisemakers have been bent. The cowbells in San Jose is one of the best examples of perfect fan interaction. And it got crazy loud. Very, very loud over in their arena when they were doing this. I think they're trying to do the same thing over in Iowa. You know, it's better, you know, rally towels. Yeah, you can get rally towels or the thundersticks, those do well too. But places like Spokane have, at least in the past, banned these type of noisemakers. Now, my understanding of the rules is that if it's an electronic noisemaker, they cannot be used. They've been totally banned. But in this case, it doesn't make any sense. It seemed as if the referees were making the calls concerning noisemakers, saying that the opposing team fans were not, can't, supposed to, whatever, they're not able to make use any form of what do we call them? Noisemakers. Period. It just doesn't seem, they were basically told to stop. It doesn't make any sense. You know, they would penalize the team for unsportsmanlike conduct. Some does not seem kosher. It really does not make any sense. Okay, but they're able to continue no matter what. You know, they had to stop during the huddle. You know, they decided, okay, you can stop during the you can do it, but you had to stop during the after the huddle breaks. That doesn't make any sense. We're the AFL, for Christ's sake. Allow us to do and to interact, especially if you are a visiting fan trying to support your team. I just don't understand this. You know, this isn't the NFL. But I'm not allowing your fans to make noise? Even though you're at another arena? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I just wish, I don't know. You know, all he said, she said type of thing, but looking at the way this is coming across, the talent fans were treated very poorly by the referees. Well, talent obviously got the last laugh. They were able to, you know, they ended up beating Bossier City. But what? That's unsportsmanlike conduct on the fans for using your noisemakers while you're trying to support your team. I really wish I could hear what you guys think about this, because I know this is probably going to be a hot-button topic, along with the referees. What? Did a coach complain about a noise? So what? What about your fans? What about your current fans? Oh, wait a minute. They don't draw anybody in Bossier City. Allow them to make noise. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But even Commissioner Kerr's verified that the rule is clear. No mechanical noise devices. No. Thundersticks, cool. You can use the not air horns, but those horns that you actually blow into and they make that horrible sound. So what? So I don't understand what's happening with that. I really don't. I just wish the league would be able to make up their minds on some of these things. Maybe they don't know the rule book. They don't have the rule book. Get them a rule book over at Bossier City. Oh, man. Horrible. Just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No sense whatsoever. Well, JP not being here, we don't have his lock of the week, but quickly, 8-Ball took a tumble this past week. A huge tumble, actually. Second week of 2-5, I think. Off his juice. Obviously, a full slate of games this week. Spokane is coming off that huge win. They are currently on a bye. Utah, Cleveland. Cleveland, I finally was able to watch the last drive by Cleveland, and then the ensuing kickoff for a touchdown by Chicago to beat the Gladiators. It's just a good example of too much time on the clock. I guess they wanted to go for it all. He was, Ben Nelson was open for the touchdown. Cleveland should be able to lick their wounds and lick Utah. Even with the coaching change in Utah, Utah's traveling to Cleveland. I don't see it getting any better for the Blaze. But Cleveland should win this one handily. As I mentioned before, Jacksonville's at Chicago. Chicago coming off that last-second last-second win versus Cleveland. Jacksonville coming off that, not really, can't really say controversial because it's the way it occurred, but Jacksonville going into Chicago. Aaron Garcia looking to become the all-time leading touchdown passer in AFL history. Should be a very, as I mentioned prior in the podcast, I love how it just so happens that these games are milestones are occurring. And we've had a lot of milestones that have taken place this year. And it's too many, too numerous to mention, but if you head over to the Week in Review column by Andy, Lupacat. Oh, he's, Andy, I'm so sorry. I know I should be pronouncing your last name properly. Lupasnack. Maybe. Lupasnack. Anyways, check out his Breaking It Down Week 9. He mentions all the records that have been broken this year, and it's just absolutely crazy. But it's been, great. It's great for the league to come back and to be able to have all these records fall, especially a lot of them being on TV. Anyways, I said Jacksonville is in Chicago, and Garcia is going to be trying to be breaking the record. On Saturday, OKC is at Tampa. Excuse me. Which OKC team is going to show up? Tampa beating Orlando last week shows that Brett Dietz is doing quite well for quarterback of the Tampa Bay Storm. Just a matter of, as I said, which Oklahoma City team and which Oklahoma City team shows up. But Tampa is at home. Orlando, Tulsa. I don't know. I said Orlando coming off that loss, but yet being able to get Bobby Scipio, being able to sign him, and he has made an impact almost immediately for the Preds. Immediately. I mean, he's been here for, 2 weeks already? And scored a rushing touchdown. And 5 receiving touchdowns. So he's made an impact immediately. That will it be just Bobby Scipio? Tulsa, when it comes to their wide receiver core and quarterback, Justin Allgood, Donovan Morgan, and all. Tulsa is at home. It's gonna be hard, I think, for the Predators. And the Predators, their winning streak was just broken, but I think they're going to continue with this current streak. And I think that Tulsa's going to take it to them. I was back after a bye. Alabama, though, is a team in turmoil. This is not the same Alabama team as earlier in the season. It's not the same Alabama team that, for some reason, was switched due to the NFL Network Flex scheduling. Quarterback situation's up in the air. Den Alexander is not the running machine and touchdown scoring machine that he was in previous weeks. It just seems to have gone downhill from there. But Iowa coming back, the big V, Ryan Vina, And they want, you know, they want to be able to win at home after losing the last game at home, Kurt Warner night. Also, too, just a quick note. Barnstormer player and wide receiver Tim Dodge is retiring. He has been in the playing arena football for, I think it was seven years. Double checking my stats here. Let's see. Either way, he's going to become a policeman. And, you know, for a man to be able to say, you know what, I've had enough, I'm leaving, I think it's good on him. I know the Barnstormers will miss him. He was a very, very well-known name in the AF2 ranks. But, you know, they should be okay with Adam. As we've seen, the Barnstormers and their core, it's not that bad either. But what was I looking at? Excuse me. But with them playing Alabama, it won't make a difference. It won't make a difference at all. If you want to see the full thing, I think the full story on Tim Dodge is over at arenafan.com. Dallas, Bossier City. Interesting. Interesting matchup. If we had a game of the week or a lock of the week, this would probably not be it. It is very possible this game is going to be one of the most boring games to watch. Dallas is at home, yes. Bossier's having problems at quarterback. Especially Raymond Filia going down. They're playing so well, and this team being on a 6-game losing streak like they are is not easy for the fans in Bossier City. Bossier Shreveport. The stomach. I'm sorry. If there's any game not to watch this week unless you're a fan, is this game. I would not be surprised. Dallas, I would think, would win this game. Bossier, as with all the problems that they're having, no, don't see it happening. Last but not least, should be a very good matchup. Late night football, Arizona, Milwaukee. Greason, you say Greason, I say Greason, is still, if I'm not mistaken, only once picked. Get it? Once picked. Once kissed. Never mind. once picked. So it goes in a great wide receiver core, as we all know. It seems like everybody has specific wide receiver cores that, you know, they got Tiger Jones, they have Nate Force, Damien Harrell, goes on and on. But Arizona, on the other hand, can counteract with Nick DeVilia. They have where is it? I had it here. They have McKelvey, they got Windsor. So this game could easily, and I would not be surprised if this game's a shootout. Would not be surprised if I see these teams scoring into the 80s on this. You know, Arizona, I think, just came off of scoring their highest amount of points ever in a game in their team history. And Milwaukee, as we know, could easily be a scoring machine. So I wouldn't be surprised if this game went into the 80s. Overtime, let's call it, I'll call it 87-86. Why not? 87-86. For who? That's... If I could predict, I would need the Magic 8 Ball. I'd be like all you bookies here and just laying the bets down. I think that's it. Is that it? Yes! That's the last game of the week. I want to remind everybody that if you have missed an episode, you can go back and listen to them. They are available at iTunes. You can also, if you have a player that receives RSS feeds, you will be able to see when all of our shows are released. And do not forget to listen to last week's AFL Roundtable. It is that our monthly chat session with fans from across North America. You can also go back to previous episodes also. Same thing with AFL Tonight. Do not know if JP will be back next week. I would imagine he will be. Just happens to be, as mentioned before, he wasn't able to join us this week. But he'll be back next week, and we will continue with what we jibber jabber the most about. Yeah, that is the AFL. So thank everybody for joining us, and remember, thank you for everybody for joining us. Sorry. For everybody here at the AFL Tonight crew and studios, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.